Yeah, and that we could get people to transcribe these, not for, you know, the nonsense, but, which I'm guilty of introducing into a discussion on occasion, but for the salient bits. So Dave, I thought, last night I suggested one topic for our little thing you're going to guide us in today, but I'm going to suggest that we do, that we start with, what's the fear?
Okay, that sounds good. So the only thing I know that we're going to do is we'll make that a group topic and we'll ask for, say, 4 volunteers. Mm-hmm. Does that seem about the right number?
Mm-hmm.
And to explain, we have, when we co-facilitate now, we've been doing this for a couple of years, we have a structure that helps us to, the facilitators, to avoid having better ideas on each other, taking over, you know, all the kind of conditioning that can happen between facilitators. It works extremely well. And so if there's 2 facilitators, typically we sit on opposite sides of the room, but one person will take the, you know, the first person who raises their hand, facilitator A will take that person, and that will be their person, basically, and they'll do whatever they need to do with that person. When that interaction is done, then the next person who raises their hand is taken by the second person, the second facilitator. So it flip-flops back and forth. And that's essentially our structure. And the person who's not facilitating is just there in case they're needed for something.
In case the original one.
Yeah. And sometimes it happens that, like, especially like during a double, there's nothing wrong with you when at times we'll have 4 facilitators. We'll end up with 4 facilitators all facilitating one group of people. And we do the same thing there, where we have an order that we go in, and it's just, you know, facilitator A, B, C, D calls in that order the people. And what I realized yesterday was it's essentially a facilitation game.
Yes. Yeah, it is. That's a good point. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Really, so it's fun. So I thought it might be fun to do that, where we get 4 people, and it seems like it'd be best just to have them on the front of the room, since the reason we separate them is so that the facilitators can communicate to some degree. But
well, although that, it might be kind of fun, because then we also would have the experience of turning.
Mm-hmm.
So if if we have A, B, C, D, mm-hmm. then it's not everybody just kind of checking out the facilitators during the downtime.
Okay, good. All right. Good.
Not that anybody would do that, but, you know, they become like television. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else going on, and so, interesting.
So we could just do like we normally do, where, you know, usually we set up so the facilitators have a little bit of, it's not like a circle, it's like there's some space up there, so they're kind of defined, and then we just start as a topic, so we have a group. And we could go through that order and people could facilitate. We might want to just keep in mind as people talking to like keep the interchanges moving a little bit, not do real long interactions just so we can have lots of exchanges and lots of facilitation practice. But then we could explore that topic and kind of have a facilitation experience at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does that sound like fun?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so we need 4. All right, Tracy is 1. We need 3 other. Karen? No?
No?
No, I changed my mind.
No, yeah.
You were just asking a question?
No, I volunteer, but the part of me who doesn't want to do it with expressing herself.
Yes. Okay, now Tracy and Karen. Who else do we have? Penny? 1. Una mas. All right, Lynette. Brave people. All right, so how... spread themselves out and we'll...
Yeah.
Can we... we can open up the room, right? To give us a little more space.
Yeah, and they'll need to be... pretty much all the way on both ends, probably, so we can both fit in, both fit in. And maybe there's not all that many spaces to fill up.
Well, but the one facilitator, Karen, you could be there in the big chair, and then Ed could be here, or you could, you know, slide that over or whatever, so you're visible, and I think there's room for us, huh?
I can.
Yeah. So Tracy will be down there.
Tracy will be down there. Yeah, there's plenty of room up here. Cameron, Deb, or Michael, if you come up here and get on this side of the facilitators, that would be great.
Okay.
Right here.
So we need to decide on an order, so we know what we're doing. So we just go...
J.
Alphabetical.
K. L. M. N. O. P. Q. R. T. How about that?
Does that end up with them flipping? I didn't notice how that worked out.
Oh, I don't know.
K. L.
Oh, no, you're right. Sorry about that. Okay, then how about Karen and Penny and Lynette and Tracy? Would that work? Okay.
What should we look at? What shall we look at today? Karen.
We're looking at our fears about facilitation and...
Speak up, Cameron, okay?
Okay. Looking at our fears about facilitation.
Hang on one second. Hey, Mickey.
Hey.
Come on, find a spot along the sides here. What we're doing is a little facilitation game. Get there by Melinda. We're doing a little facilitation game where these are our four facilitators and our subject is fear, and we just began. Okay. Shout out, Cameron.
So one fear that I have is that somebody will say something, and I actually experienced this the other night in our group when we were planning our retreat. So I fear that somebody's going to say something, and I'm just going to go blank or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so this happened in group the other night, and you fear that someone's going to say something and that you're just going to go blank.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we were doing this exercise, and then it was looked at me. I was supposed to say something, and for some reason, I had no idea what was expected. And I just said yes or something to hold his face while something came, and nothing came. I mean, I had no idea what was expected of me. For some reason, I just didn't.
So it did happen, and you held the space to see what would come, and nothing came, and you had no idea what was expected of you, so you just didn't.
Right, and I, you know, if that were to happen on the cushion, that it never has so far. Not that I do a lot of facilitating, it never has. But what happened in that situation the other night was kind of disturbing to me afterwards, because what happened was everybody started laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the person who couldn't think of something felt really bad.
Yeah.
But then it was kind of like, oh, people think I was trying to be funny. So then I went along with that.
Yeah, so what I hear you saying is that, I believe you said that afterwards this happened, but and that it was disturbing that people laughed. And
to the one who couldn't think of anything.
To the one who couldn't think of it. And then there was these feelings, these bad feelings.
Yeah, kind of humiliated in a way, but very quickly I got it that, well anyway, this is kind of irrelevant, but what happened actually was, after the fact, I realized that I totally abandoned the person who had that feeling and the one who had that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, so you saw that you abandoned that person.
Yeah.
And then the one who was having that experience.
Right. Mm-hmm. And okay. So that was a lot to go on with just one little thing. And so there's kind of that behind the idea of facilitating, there's some kind of fear that something would happen, and I think my conditioning or whatever was going on would interfere with the
too much. That's good, but no, it was very, very good. But hopefully she's not going to have the same experience.
No,
she does, though, we can go
no,
around.
No, yeah. She's fine.
Okay, good.
Becca. Well, I was looking at this whole idea of fear this morning. And I saw that there's a real split in me, this one that's just convinced she's not ready for this at all, and then the one who feels really, and has gotten some advice from people that it's time to get out there.
So you're looking at a split in yourself as you look at fear between someone who's really
thinks she's not a boss, and then someone else who's gotten advice actually that it's time for her to get out there.
Yeah, yeah. And so the relationship between these two is generating a lot of suffering.
So the relationship between those two is generating a lot of suffering.
So it doesn't feel like the fear in itself is the problem. Or that it's actually when I get identified with one or the other, it just triggers the duality in the high gear.
So it's not the fear so much, is that you have these two parts, and when you get identified with one or the other, it triggers that duality.
Yeah, and in that... let me see what that is looking like in my life. It kind of looks like a car that's sputtering, you know, that goes and then, and it's very uninspiring to people to be a part of that, including myself.
So it looks like, or at least it feels like, a car that sort of sputters, start, stop, and it feels to you very uninspiring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Melinda. Well, I have a fear that's left over from the days when I had panic attacks, and it happens when I'm in a situation where I need to write in front of the group, mm-hmm. and this. It happens regularly, and there is nothing wrong with you because we have a section at the beginning where we have to record stuff on the whiteboard. And every other time or so, it falls to me to do that. And what happens is that I get a lot of conversation, sort of almost subliminal, ahead of time, that you're going to be really nervous when this happens. Some of my worst panic attack days were when I was writing on a blackboard in college, and I just fell apart and was, you know, really, really shaking.
So, you have a fear about when you used to have panic attacks, and the way it comes about, or it has come about, is when you're writing, and you notice that before that happens, there's something that's kind of subliminal?
Well, it doesn't actually happen anymore. Uh-huh. What happens is the subliminal conversation that this is going to be a problem when you get up there.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So it's not happening anymore, but what's happening is a subliminal conversation.
Yeah, it's like the tape starts again.
The tape's still playing.
Yeah, and in that way, something that I'm very grateful for, because it is so clear that there's no connection between what I'm told ahead of time and what actually happens, that I can... That has come in really handy in terms of being able to facilitate people who get conversations ahead of time trying to scare them out of things.
Uh-huh. So it's for you, it's been very handy because you know that conversation is not connected to what's really going to happen.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty handy.
Well, I have a lot that goes on about facilitation, and one experience I have is, I have a small sitting group in Athens, and so I absolutely love facilitating that.
So you're seeing that there's a lot that goes on facilitation, and one thing is there's a group in Athens, and you really enjoy facilitating a lot.
Yeah, and so even when, I'm really tired or even, identified, at this point, I know I'll show up. I know when I get on the cushion, I'll show up.
Yeah, so something about, knowing that even if you're tired or something's up, that you will still just show up.
Yeah. Okay. Now, when it comes to the monastery, there's a whole, it's like a whole different thing.
So when it comes to the monastery, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, and I've said to my friends that the most horrifying thought I could ever have is having to sit in the front of the room at the monastery. Mm-hmm. It's like,
So there's something like you say to your friends, one of the most horrifying thoughts are, having to sit on the cushion at the monastery in front of the room.
Yeah, and so I noticed when we started to do this exercise, I'm projecting terror onto everybody. You know, when people started to volunteer, I just started to feel terror for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it's really my terror, I know, but...
So you're noticing that when this exercise started, that you were projecting terror on everyone, and you're realizing that it's your terror that you're projecting on.
Yeah, and so, since it's like day two and people are already facilitating in front of the whole group, you know, it's like, I guess I'm trying to figure out how to be kind, because I don't want to put somebody in a situation that'll be horrible for them, but, you know, and to just be really compassionate about how I am in the rest of the workshop.
Yeah, so realizing that, you know, here we are in day two, and you want to really be able to be kind towards that one that is really terrifying, and you don't want to project the terror on anyone, that you really want to find a compassionate and kind place.
Okay, now, shall we go around again? Is that...
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Did you have another idea? Or?
No, I just didn't know in terms of time if we wanted to give other people a chance or if we want to keep going. But I want to make a comment at this juncture anyway. That one of the things that I hope people are getting out of this is the difference in style. You know, everybody brings their own style to the process. And in bringing our own style to it, we don't sound like automatons. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing what needs to be done. We're reflecting, but it's not. People don't sound like parrots because they are saying it all in their own way. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really important to get, especially as we deal with the subject of fear about it. You know, we're not meant to sound like somebody else. We're meant to sound like ourselves, being really attentive and reflecting someone who is working on something.
You and I had a conversation about that a few days ago, and what we're talking about is how good that is for the Sangha. You know, we're talking about it in reference to the conference calls that are happening. You know?
Yes.
But it really is, because it shows everybody that we can all be who we are.
Yes.
Because otherwise, it's like we're facilitating according to some idea. Like, we might try to copy you or something like that. And then we're not being ourselves at all. We're being completely inauthentic, but we're not showing people what's really possible.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, one of the things that I've thought about several times with this retreat that I want to make really clear is that people need not to facilitate like me. People shouldn't facilitate like me because I don't facilitate, which is why I don't do TINWs. Mm-hmm. I teach. I'm the teach. Mm-hmm. And it's not good. It comes from many, many years of doing all of this stuff, not from an idea about something that I've heard somebody say. So this would be a good time to put that in there. And if people model their facilitation after me, you're really going to get into trouble because you'll find yourself saying things and you won't have a backup. Mm-hmm. Do you know, if somebody challenges you on it and you have nowhere to go because you've actually just heard me say it 1,000 times, so you know that's where it goes in the conversation. Mm-hmm. So don't, anybody, please, don't ever model your facilitation after me. Model it after the monks.
Yeah. You know, I look at that a lot because there's some, voices or self-hate will say, well, or whatever, we'll say, we'll want to compare my skills to someone that's been facilitating a lot longer. And, you know, it is my experience that anything other than reflective listening comes from experience. You know, so there are times where that does happen for me on the cushion, you know. It'll come from my experience. And then I realize that, and that's what happens with, like, you know, listening to the monks facilitate and you know, remembering that, and that's fine. That's the beauty of it.
Yes. And because that's where we say, in my experience. Mm-hmm. Okay? And nobody can argue with you if you're talking about your experience. And when it happens organically, naturally like that, it'll be fine and comfortable and appropriate. That's very good, yeah.
I wanted to say something about reflective listening too. It was really pleasant hearing that.
Yes.
It's so relaxing. Mm-hmm. And when I started facilitating, I did nothing but reflective listening. That was it for about probably like 2 years. And then finally you said, you know, you might want to expand your repertoire a little bit. but I really value that experience. Because mm-hmm. that's what grounds us here. That's yes. what helps us to be here. And then, and I also know from facilitating the Reflective Listening Buddies program how difficult it is, and also from my own experience, how difficult it is for people to get things like trying to help people or trying to fix people or, you know, all these different agendas that we bring in.
Or come up with a better word mm-hmm. for their experience.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah. We talked about it a little the other day where it's like, you know, the attention as a facilitator has to be completely on the other person. You know, but that's a really subtle thing to see. You know, the difference between it being over there and being over here, because it can slide over here, and suddenly it's completely about me. I'm all involved in what I'm thinking about, and what's important to me, or what's entertaining me, or what's scaring me, and I've just left the person I'm talking to completely out of the picture.
Yeah.
But reflective listening keeps that connection alive, and so you know, if we're grounded in that, then we can start to sort of maybe put our toes in the water of some other possibilities, but we got to have a rock-solid foundation in reflective listening.
Yeah, and it, out of that rock-solid foundation comes what Karen just mentioned,
yeah.
and it is natural. And what, to me, the importance of what you're saying is, and I bet everybody has had this experience, you get out there and you realize you're lost.
You're gone. Yeah.
And if you don't have that rock-solid reflection to come back to, you can just spin farther and farther out there mm-hmm. until it really becomes horrific.
Yeah, it's true. And another nice thing about reflective listening that I noticed for myself is as I've gone through, and it's an ongoing exploration process that I think for me will go on for the rest of my life as I continue in that role. But there's, you know, you've gotta risk doing the wrong thing or being the wrong person or all the things that conditioning is sort of trying to put you inside of while you're facilitating. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as, you know, you get that foundation reflective listening, you start to, you know, experiment a little bit about, well, what are these other things that people are doing and how does that work? And, but you can, because you've got reflective listening to go back to, you can do that. You can take a little step out and go, oh boy, that wasn't it. And then you can just come back and start reflecting again. And then, okay, then you make the, you know, because usually when you lose it, you lose the connection with the person. And you yes. can tell when their eyes start glazing over. But then you can reestablish that connection with the person, and then you're there. And you're, okay, now we're back. Mm-hmm. And now, okay, now what's arising within, and then what's the difference between what's coming from here and what's coming from, like, a better idea of conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Penny.
One of the things I like about reflective listening is it expresses that you trust the other person. Mm-hmm. You know, you trust
yes.
that they know, they will find their way, and you don't have to do anything for them except help them hear what they're saying.
Yes, and when Dave was talking, I thought, you know, what it really is love. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's just sitting with somebody mm-hmm. and rooting for them, mm-hmm. you know, just riveted by, you know, what it is that they're doing and saying, and you just want to be there with them as yeah. they do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Melinda?
Well, I was just going to add, I think we pointed at it last night and probably have other times, that one of the ways out of when you wander off and you realize you've lost that connection is simply to acknowledge it.
Yes.
Somebody did that last night, I thought, very skillful again. Just
yeah, it, that would have been a good one for Cameron. You know, just to say, whoa, actually what just happened is I drew a complete blank.
Yeah, because I think that that's the modeling that we want to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not,
right.
It's whoa.
Yeah.
I just lost the whole train of thought.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you went on without me. Yeah, Alex, did you have something?
Yeah, I did. I just recently had a very powerful experience of being reflective listened and reflective listening with somebody, and I totally right there with the, it's the, I'm just, I was just completely captivated by everything that was being shared, and I felt the same thing when I was sharing as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like like we were one person almost, you know, just doing this kind of thing, like passing something back and forth and kind of really caring about it as we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And there was something about that that was so much more satisfying than, you know, look there, look there, look there. I mean, it was like someone, when that sort of thing happens, it feels like there's an agenda and I'm not okay the way I am. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, you know what I mean? Like, someone
right.
knows something.
Like, I'm trying to move you to some better place that I can see that you need to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're tossing the thing all sorts of ways.
Well, I'm tossing it, and you're meant to...
I'm meant to see where you threw it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, and it's so, I don't know. It's so easy to get... For me to get to a place where I need to understand something about why this is happening, mm-hmm. it's almost like what we had to happen when we were kids, in a way.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you need to put that down. I don't even know why I need to put that down.
Uh-huh.
You know, uh-huh. And there's an assumption that I need to do that.
Uh-huh.
And something in that, the recent experience, just opened up a whole new, I would say, love for it.
Mm-hmm.
And a love for reflective listening as... reflecting process too, which is a really subtle distinction between me bringing up a story and having the other person loving my story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a way we can look at that a little bit, because I that's something that comes up for me often, and is that if I come from a place where I'm actually believing the stuff that I'm embroiled in and someone else is reflecting that, it almost feels like I end up leaving feeling like I'm validated for this thing that I'm stuck in, or someone's
uh-huh.
agreeing with me that, yeah, there is something wrong with me.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean, in a way?
Yes, I do, yeah. And I hope we don't lose that point before this is over, mm-hmm. because that is an important one,
yeah,
a really important one.
It's the hard spot where someone is just crying and just so into their... Mm-hmm. I mean, into the thing that's basically the cause of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone is able to reflect it as though it's over here and we're looking at it together,
mm-hmm.
it's that really, that's the experience of the thing passing back and forth between us, is that we're able to see the thing that's causing me to suffer, and it's out here.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer in here and being reinforced.
Yeah, and somebody's helping you look at that thing that causes you to suffer.
Yeah, yeah. And we're looking at it together.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Dave.
I don't want to take up too much space. But
yeah, because I do feel like we could
okay.
just go, no, I want to hear what you have to say, but then I do feel like we should move on.
Okay.
Yeah.
The way I think about what Alex is talking about, if I'm understanding what he's saying, is the difference between facilitating the particulars versus the universal. Because if somebody is sharing, and I, as a facilitator, go in and basically go on the level of their content with them, then we're the only ones actually who are interested in that conversation. You know, the person who's talking and the person in the facilitator, everyone else, that's when the energy starts to fall out of the room. Everybody's just, nobody, it's hard to stay present in the room. The energy just kind of dies.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm facilitating, like I'm saying, facilitating the process that's going on, and so instead of going down to the level of the content, facilitating what is going on in that.
Okay, so you know, I just don't know what to do. I just I don't know what to do. You know, there are all these layoffs at work. Everybody there hates me.
Mm-hmm.
They've only kept me there because they were afraid I'd sue them if they got rid of me. Now they have a perfect excuse for getting rid of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm gonna be out of work. I'm not gonna be able to get another job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm gonna do. I mean, I'm just in a panic.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sleep at night. I can't. You can see how skinny I've gotten. I can't hold food down. You know, nobody wants to talk to me anymore because it's all I can think about. It's all I talk about. I mean, my friends don't even return my phone calls anymore because they're just so sick of listening to this. But there's nothing I can do because I'm terrified.
Mm-hmm. And so if you were to look at, like, how that experience is being created inside of you, how would you describe that?
Well, it's not being created inside me. It's being created by people at work who are using this as an excuse to get rid of me. Mm-hmm. They don't care that I'm not going to be able to get another job. They don't care that I'm not going to be able to pay my mortgage. They don't care whether my kids go hungry. Mm-hmm. All they care about is using this as an opportunity to get rid of me. Mm-hmm.
So Sharon, are you familiar with the idea of projection that we use in this practice?
Well, sort of. Not, I mean...
Okay. Well, the idea of projection is that basically we create our own experience. I know sometimes that's really hard to see, especially when it's...
When they're trying to get rid of me.
Exactly. When it's a situation that seems, in the way we look at, really real. You know, this seems...
Yeah, it's really real. Mm-hmm. If I don't have a job, I don't have a house, I don't buy food for my kids. Yeah. It's really real.
So I wonder if you'd be willing to play a little game with me with this for just a second. Would you?
Sure. Yeah.
So
yeah, well, as long as you understand that to me this is not a game.
Right, I got it. Yeah, I understand that this is a really big issue for you in your life, that there's a lot of suffering.
This is the biggest issue that I've ever faced in my life.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a lot of suffering, there's a lot of fear that's there, there's a whole lot going on. So just for a second, if you wouldn't mind, let's sort of pretend that it's not actually them, just as a hypothetical, and look to see if there we can see sort of what you might be bringing toward, or even what, you know, this thing that we call.
Well, you know, I have problems. I admit it. I'm not perfect. You know, I understand. You know, I know that they have things that you know that they don't like about me. I've known that for years. Mm-hmm.
So.
How are you doing? Amazing. Can he get it now? He's gonna get the reflecting time. I just don't want to take up the whole time. But anyway, I just thought I would help you make your point.
Mm-hmm. So what did you see about
it? You've had me in a few workshops, haven't you?
That's right. I mean, you didn't express any willingness in that. You know, usually there is a little bit. And, you know, what I was trying to do is to negotiate with you to see if I could get you to admit that you have a little bit of willingness. And then once that's there, then we can start to actually work on what's going on inside. But if there actually isn't any willingness there, then there's really not a whole lot I can do but just reflect you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was great.
Yes.
I was just going to say, and also it seems like with a person like that, that's the highest level kind of.
Oh, I've seen him right here on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we've had him in Arizona your own
country. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, one little tiny thing to try in that situation that I find is just mm-hmm. just to reflect, like you used the word panic, mm-hmm. and a couple other feeling words, and just sometimes just reflecting that, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm hearing that you're feeling really panicked. And sometimes that can be just a tiny little portal into, and kind of, just like Dave's saying, kind of a way to test, is there any willingness here? And if there isn't, then it's like, back out.
Right, which is what Dave was going to get to do in any second, because I made it clear. I'm not going to see anything other than my story now.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of with what Alex is talking about. You know, at what point do you just go, okay, either pick something like that yeah. the person can mm-hmm. feel like they've been heard, mm-hmm. And just get it that right now they're not ready to go anywhere with this. You could even, you know, make a suggestion for the next thing that a person could do, you know, a next step that a person could take, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Little theater. All right, are we ready?
One of the fears I've been looking at is that just in reflective listening with people, that the voices sometimes just are so talkative and just talking to me so much that it's hard to listen to the other person.
So one of the fears is that the voices are talking to you so much that it will be hard to
listen to the other person.
Yeah. Because I noticed even when I thought, oh, I could talk about this, there was so much conversation just thinking about talking about it that I was having trouble hearing what other people were saying.
So you are even having trouble hearing what other people are saying because the noise from the voices are talking so much, and it sounds like your attention is on them.
Right, yes. That it's the attention's going to the voices and listening and trying not to listen and negotiating with them and, you know, doing all this stuff, and meanwhile I'm missing.
Yeah, so as long as so the attention is on the negotiation and the voices, and then you're missing what's going on.
Yeah, but I did have a thought earlier this morning that conversation and listening to the voices is also taking attention away from the part that's really scared.
Ah, yeah, so you're seeing that the attention is taken away from the part that's really scared by listening to having the attention on the voices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So work with the one who's so scared, maybe be less attention on the voices.
So putting the attention on the one who's scared will be less attention for the voices.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chris?
So I was just noticing a place that I experience a lot of fear is when, like in a conversation like we just had, and talk about reflective listening being kind of the rock, you know, foundation of facilitation, that I really easily go to that place of, you know, conditioning will automatically suggest, well, you don't do that. You don't have that skill.
So one of the places that fear comes up for you is in a conversation such as we just had, where something like reflective listening is mentioned as the rock bottom foundation. Where conditioning takes you is, well, I don't do that. I don't have that skill.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the fear is of, I mean, that kind of sets it up then. So then in facilitation, you know, I can be kind of vulnerable to those little kind of side swipes that will come in, you know, at various locations. And that'll automatically take me to that place of, it's like at the right behind the fear is a shame or something like that, that I'll be exposed as a, you know, as a fake, or you know, somebody, you know, all the things that I just don't want to have other people see, or the conditioning tells me I don't want to have other people see.
Let me just clarify. So, does that actually happen when you're facilitating, or do you worry that will happen when you're facilitating?
Mostly, it's beforehand. So there'll be stories about it, and you know, I'll experience that fear, and then there's an assumption that since I'm experiencing the fear beforehand, that it will happen on the cushion, which, you know, for me, it would be the setup for it to happen on the cushion. And occasionally it will happen on the cushion where that will come in.
So ahead of time, often what the conditioning is telling, what the voices are telling you, is that this is going to happen, this fear is going to happen, mm-hmm. you're not going to reflect properly, mm-hmm. And there's going to be shame around that. And then that's a setup, actually, for it's actually happening when you're on the cushion.
Mm-hmm. Can be.
Yeah. Is there more?
Well, there's always more. yeah, I think the another piece of it would be another setup that happens for me is that one of my childhood kind of beliefs is to be the best, and so there's a lot of pressure to kind of be that, and that I'll get told stories beforehand, you know, especially if I've had some kind of place where I've been successful, and then I'll kind of relax in that place a little bit. So I'll get told stories about, you know, well, how good that was, or kind of how I am in comparison with other people, and then, you know, there's another kind of place where I get set up so that, you know, I'll be kind of attention in that kind of some identity in that place of well, you know, I'm doing this right in some sense, and that's kind of feels to me like that's the channel in which conditioning can kind of come in and kind of get to that little person that you know he's not doing a good job, the person that feels that fear.
So you're conditioned to I want to be the best. And when you have experiences where you really do things very well, it's another kind of setup, because you can kind of rest in that place of, I'm doing this fine, and then that's a setup for next time, when it doesn't feel like you're doing it so fine, that little person who's afraid is exposed.
Claire?
What should resonate to me, because I have a, part of my conditioning is about doing it right. I notice a lot of anxiety when I'm reflective listening, because there's somebody on my shoulder with a clipboard writing down everything that I should remember, you know, or telling me, oh, that's an important point. The longer somebody shares, the longer they're listening.
So you have a lot of anxiety about this, because what you're noticing is it's all about doing it right. And as you're thinking about doing it right, there's like this clipboard over here. And everything that person says, you feel the need to reflect.
Mm-hmm. And I notice how, you know, this really pulls me away from being present with what's being shared to me. But there's so much anxiety around, like, you know, oh, if I let go of that and just be present to what's sharing, you know, am I not going to remember anything? Am I going to... It's like a part of me has to take a leap of faith or something to let go of that.
Mm. So you're looking at how, if you took a leap of faith, or you feel like a part of you might want to take a leap of faith?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's like the more I get sucked into that... I got to do it right place, the more I lose that place of believing in my own innate adequacy.
Mm-hmm. 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 So there's your innate adequacy, right?
Yeah.
And when you get sucked into this having to do it right, you sense that you lose that.
Yeah. And that place of innate adequacy comes up too, because in a different context where there's a part of me that feels like I have to do something to help the person who's I'm facilitating. And then I notice I get anxious around that. And then it's a similar process, because if I just come back to the place of remembering the innate adequacy of the person sitting in front of me, you know, it's so relaxing to just come back to, all that I need to do is facilitate, is reflect them, and they're adequate to their experience, and somewhere in them is the place that has everything that they need.
Uh-huh. So you can see that they're adequate to their experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, it's just incredibly relaxing to me to remember that, and incredibly sad to me when to see how I forget that.
Mm-hmm. Forgetting that seems to, but it's very relaxing when you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Being in a position of responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
seeing them, seeing that there's a person that's really afraid of being in a position of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And there's something about facilitation where you're seeing how there really isn't an I there. Mm-hmm. And it's just about really just being at center. Mm-hmm.
And finding out that I'm adequate in my experience.
Yeah, and just finding out that you are adequate to your experience.
Right. Should
we switch?
Yeah, that'd be great. Should we ask anybody?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You facilitators, anything that you thought about, or anybody else, anything you saw, or Bill?
Yeah, I saw. It was interesting as everybody, you know, we were expressing what was a fear for facilitating. I could resonate with every one of those. In, you know, I have different parts that had every one of those fears, mm-hmm. and some were even opposite fears, and yet they were. It was all, you know, I could see that it's all been here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tracy.
When I thought we were just going to do one round of this, when we did the second round, you know, what was the huge blessing is the first round, I was distracted from the part. I mean, there was a part of me that was also aware that Sherry's here and the monks are all here and the whole room was full of people here, and so that was taking a little bit of attention. And then it was so awesome having the opportunity for the second round, because that noise was, you know, it was like you all were present and it was fine, but it wasn't distracting. Mm-hmm. And so I think it just allowed me to really be able to be here more, having the opportunity to do it a second time. So, you know, first it was a fear, and then it was like, oh, good.
Yes, an argument for facilitating often.
Yeah.
Penny?
Well, I was struck again by just how helpful it is to reflect, because I'm nervous being here, and I could feel that, but all I had to do was just reflect. You know, it was a blessing to me I didn't have to do anything else. I just had to hear the words and say them back. And uh-huh. So it's just it's very helpful to the facilitator to do.
Yeah, and you really do have something to focus on. Absolutely. The person you're listening to.
Yeah.
And then you really have something to focus on saying it back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the other thing I was feeling is, you know, I am part of the rotation here, so I'm accustomed to facilitating here, but not with a crowd of people. And not with, you know, this particular group of people. So I'm just aware that every time you facilitate, you know, it's a whole new adventure.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I really noticed with Lynette's facilitation, how she summarized effectively some of the things that Claire was saying, that and didn't reflect everything, but she picked a key point. And what I heard was a really significant key point about the process that Claire was describing, and then Claire went on with more of what she was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is, again, to me, one of those personal styles that works for Lynette. Mm-hmm. You know, she, for whatever reason, she has the ability to hear that little phrase that just, you know, there could be three paragraphs, and then there's that little phrase that just moves it along.
Yeah.
But it's nothing that we would want to emulate if that's not our style. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I noticed with some other people's reflection is how they'll use an emphasis on a word to kind of turn it in that direction, which is, again, just a personal style thing. It's nothing that we can try to mimic, because we're not going to hear that word in that way, or we might not, you know, we might pick a different key phrase and go off here. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to listen to other people's styles, as an encouragement to find your own. Mm-hmm. You know, which I feel like everybody who has facilitated so far, that's what we hear, even in the little circles that we did the other day. We get to hear how a person just puts their little twist on it, that they're still doing it, but it's unique, and it works because it's your unique expression of what it is that we're doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it's trusting that and you know, going with what is comfortable for you until, and I know you have it, I can tell by listening to it, but just that, yeah, it doesn't sound like a style to you, you know, because you're doing it.
Well, that also reminds me of the exercises that we were doing about awareness and attention with the first night we were here. When I was talking was the time I was least aware.
Yes, always.
So this is really a good reminder to practice that so that when I'm facilitating, I'm more, that's how I'll learn what you're saying, I'll be more aware of. And so I'm practicing that now as I'm speaking.
That expanded awareness. Yes, not turning your attention away.
Right.
Because if you turn your attention away, you're in big trouble,
but to
right?
expand the awareness when I'm speaking so that I'll...
Yeah, mm-hmm. And taping things, and or recording things. We don't say tape anymore. We don't have tapes anymore. but recording things and listening to them, and listening to other people's style, and then listening to what feels comfortable for you. You know, it's a whole, with everybody, it's literally a different pacing. You know, I would think Tracy was actually the true Southerner in the group, because it's this just really soft, kind of slow, feeling to it. But I talk really fast, so I can't do that, even though I like the sound of it, you know. To me, Penny's ability to... basically capture every word you said and say it back, but not sound like a parrot. I mean, it's just like, okay, Chris said it. Oh, that's really interesting. Penny said it. That's really interesting. It's the same thing, but it sounds like two different people talking. I mean, of course it's two different people talking, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Saying two completely different things, but they're exactly the same thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a personal style sort of thing. So that's the most helpful thing that I hope it's the most helpful thing that everybody is going to get out of this, is to relax into who you are. Mm-hmm. Now the thing that I did with Dave, what I hope you'll get out of it, is there are times when you can risk things. Okay? When you're working with somebody who you feel like, really, this would be a good time to do some clarifying, or some drawing out, or offer a suggestion, or whatever, because, you know, the person's not actually going anywhere anyway. do you know what I mean? Then that's a great time to just experiment. Okay. Yeah, Penny.
Just one other thing that occurred to me, thinking about when I facilitated here, one time, particularly with reflective listening, is really helpful to me in two places. One is, there are some people whose style of speaking is such, or a style of thinking is such, that I have no idea what they're talking about. I can't track them.
Oh!
And so,
oh,
it's
yes.
really helpful to just have to say the words back.
Yes.
I don't know where they're going, and I don't even understand where they're going. That's very helpful, but the other place that's really helpful is when I do know where they're going. Their style is very similar to mine, and where I want to go, jump out in front of them.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So it's really helpful to just stay with reflective listening.
Yeah. 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 And especially when we can do reflective listening in that way that makes it unique. That you really are reflecting, but the person you're reflecting and anybody else in the room isn't going, oh God, you know, we heard it once, we're hearing it again, and the cadence is exactly the same, and the emphasis is exactly the same, and the pronunciation of the words is exactly the same, and it's really Yeah, it's not helpful. That's just my encouragement. It is really not helpful. If you're listening to some critic inside, you might be meeting the standard that that critic is setting, but you're not, you may have the, what is it, you have the letter of the law but not the spirit. Mm-hmm. And it's only when we relax into having the spirit of the thing that we get comfortable, the person we're reflecting gets comfortable, everybody else in the room is able to relax and really go with the process. Yeah.
Chris,
and then Jan. That's very relaxing for me, is because I can see how conditioning uses, sets it up that there really needs to be a way this needs to look, and that there's no room for my style in that.
Right.
And so this is just a place where just experiment with it and see
exactly.
kind of in and outs out of those boundaries and see how that feels. And
yeah, and as long as we have the basics, we're not going to hurt anybody. You know?
Right.
I mean, what's the worst that happens? They have a bad reflection.
they straighten you out right away.
Exactly. Exactly. No, that's not what I said. No, that's not what I meant. And even if it's a very gentle, it doesn't matter. You've given them a chance to clarify something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They got to say what it was, hear it. They got to get what you got. No, well, let's see. No, that's not exactly. And then they get to do it again. This is all good.
Yeah, it's nice because everybody's doing the same thing. Nobody's doing anything any different than anyone else in the room.
Exactly.
So, which is, no one's actually doing anything at all.
Right.
Very relaxing.
It's very relaxing. Yeah. Even when you get into that place where you just lost it completely, you know, I have no idea. Just to be able to say, you know what, I actually have no idea what you just said. I don't know what happened. And then they go back and you can watch them. They pick up the thread. They look at it again, and they say to you, "What a gift!"
Yeah, it's I've noticed that too. It's like people want it to work out.
Uh-huh.
But they want to be having an experience of some sort, and it's happening, and so they're willing to kind of go wherever this goes. And
yes, and we're looking at our own stuff, so that's something we want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're reflecting something, I've got something going on, you're reflecting it. I mean, probably for most of us, we'd sit there all day and have somebody help us look at whatever is going on with us. So it's not a hardship, you know, that I'm having to go over it two or three times. Thank you. Jan?
Well, it's all been really helpful. But I wanted to mention, too, just how helpful it's been to hear what's come up as the fears. And just getting back to a little bit of what Phil said, because a lot of it I've seen and some of it I've sort of pushed aside, I realize. So to bring it to the surface and realize so that it's not, well, hopefully it won't get in the way, that it's all there. It's like bringing all the kids together. It's just really helpful to hear it.
Yeah, or even to know that they're all there and not be distracted by them. So, you know, now all
right,
the kids
no one has
are,
to yell.
Yeah, all the kids are in the living room, they're doing whatever, they're bouncing off the sofas, they're doing whatever it is that they're doing. We know that. So they can all be there doing that, and I can still go ahead and do what it is that I'm doing.
Yeah, it's sort of, I don't know how else to say it, sort of avoids the surprises. The things that maybe I hadn't been so aware of, it's coming up right now through everybody's sharing.
Yeah. The power of Sangha. Lynette and then Dave.
I was fairly free. And what was really nice about it was that I realized that I was going to facilitate people who were going to talk about their fears. So it was just such a great topic. So I just really, it just took me away from myself. You know, and so I think that was the... I think that's the experience that we're looking for.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That is so key. That is so it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all suffering human beings trying to find our way out of suffering. That's what we all share. Mm-hmm. And the more we realize that, the more we really get that, the more we can be there for one another. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To whatever anxiety I have going on, The person sitting in front of me probably has at least that much. And so there, we're in this together. Let's patch this boat and start rowing.
Right. And I, you know, it was, I felt like I wanted to listen to them. You know, and I could just let go, you know.
Let them speak for all of us.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.